Good morning. This is Robert Murphy, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for September 5th, 2023. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Autumn Waiting Chip Hessenflut.
Autumn Waiting. That is that your dance name?
That's my dance name. It's the name I use when I'm out there waiting for Autumn, Steve.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. If you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Autumn Waiting. It is the first day after Labor Day. Happy post-Labor Day. Rolling right into fall.
You can almost smell the pumpkin spice, Steve.
The pumpkin spice is out there. You can certainly, the truth is out there with the pumpkin spice.
Well, now it is. We're waiting for the cinnamon season, Steve.
Is that another dancer?
No, that's when the holiday season comes, Steve. We're right now, we're in pumpkin spice season.
And then peppermint.
That's right. And then we start moving towards the shamrock shake, Steve. It just keeps going.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. And when I say movie of the week, Chip, I truly mean it this time. I am so proud to tell you about the movie of the week this week, Nandor Fodor and the Talking Mongoose. This is a ridiculous farce of a silly movie with my name in it.
It's got your name in it, Steve.
I'm very proud of this very small movie that came out this week that is available to see in your local movie theater if you live in a very, very specific area. This is a very small release in theaters. It's going to come to streaming very quickly, and I think that you will like this movie.
Well, what's really interesting about this film is Simon Pegg is our actor who's starring in it.
There are four big name stars in this movie. Simon Pegg is the one who's playing Nandor Fodor, a Hungarian-American parapsychologist in 1935, and he is quite a character.
Does he say blah, 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 Steve?
Does not. That's the thing that bothered me the most about Simon Pegg is he chose a ridiculous accent to portray this Hungarian American. I did not buy his accent. I know Hungarian Americans, and you, sir, you are no Hungarian American.
They sound like they're from the south side of Chicago, Steve.
If he went south side of Chicago, I would have bought it. He went with this very ridiculous accent, and I did not accept him as a Hungarian American. I accepted him as a parapsychologist. He is investigating weird, mysterious things around the world, and he gets a letter about a British family that has a talking mongoose that lives in their walls, and that mongoose is named Jeff.
Of course it is, Steve. If I had to pick the name for a mongoose, what would I go with?
Bob the mongoose. No, Jeff is quite an interesting investigation here. I was enthralled by this story. This is a true story. This really happened. There really was a parapsychologist named Nandor Fodor. He wrote with Sigmund Freud. He appeared on the Johnny Carson show in the 1960s. He investigated weird things around the world. And we finally get this story in the theaters.
Well, if he only had a travel guide, Steve.
He could have printed Fodor's travel guide and made it to the Isle of Man to investigate this talking mongoose. The other stars of this movie, Minnie Driver, Christopher Lloyd, and Neil Gaiman did a fantastic job. I would say Minnie Driver steals this movie from Simon Pegg. She is the best actor in this movie. She is the one to watch in this movie. She does such a great job as the assistant to this guy, as the one who's looking at these possibilities and wondering if this is true. The word farce is used in the script multiple times, and there's so much farce in this story. It opens with a scene where two characters are smoking cigarettes so much that the audience laughs at how much smoke is in the room. There's a farcical level of smoking, and then they start drinking alcohol in this movie, and that becomes ridiculous as well. There are so many questions in this piece. It's an absurdist story. It is very much like Waiting for Godot. There are no answers to, is this really a talking mongoose? It's about truth, it's about beliefs, and it's about Pam's favorite word, epistemology, how we know things. How do we know that there's a talking mongoose? If they never see the talking mongoose, does that mean that it doesn't exist? If they hear the talking mongoose, can we still be skeptical about this idea of an invisible talking mongoose?
Steve, you didn't tell me we had to bring out the hookah.
Well, what I wanted to tell you was we should bring out the book from last week, the Carl Sagan book, The Demon-Haunted World. The idea of belief, the idea of truth is on display in this story.
So is it a good film?
Oh, that's a loaded question, my friend. This is a very intriguing story. Every scene, you're waiting for the truth to be known. You're waiting for the scene to evolve, and it never actually gets to an ending, to an answer. You don't know, and you're off kilter the whole time as an audience member. Again, back to the theater of the absurd, Waiting for Godot. You're never quite sure what's happening, what's true in here. At every other scene, you can go, oh, yes, absolutely. This is a talking mongoose. There's a talking mongoose. There it is. I can hear it. I know that there's a talking mongoose. And then in the opposite scene, you go, ah, this family is really creating this and making us believe that in something that is not real. Everybody that went to the movies with me, I want to thank everybody, first of all, that came out to the movies, Linda and Bob and Kaylee, Magda and Andrew, Clayton, and our executive producers, Amanda and Ron, and my wife, Heather. We all went out to the movies to see this one. Amanda said, is what we believe real? If it's not, does it matter? Does it matter that we believe in something that's not real? Or is belief important enough? Ron said, it feels like a short story that would be at home on a PBS mystery show. This is an interesting, intriguing, very British mystery that comes to no fruition at the end. Is it a good movie? It's a fun hour and a half, Chip. It's fun to see Simon Pegg. It's fun to see the acting talent of Minnie Driver. It's really nice to see Christopher Lloyd here, even though he is showing his age. And that's really sad. It's really sad to see Christopher Lloyd being that character that we love and showing his age here.
Okay.
I recommend this. I recommend that you see this movie, not just because my name is on it, not just because I love all of these people in it. It's a story that has really stuck with us. We've had conversations about what is truth, what is belief, and how do we know things? What is the epistemology? And that's what this story brings us. It's silly. It's ridiculous. It is a farce. Be prepared to laugh out loud, mostly at the facial acting. There's so many scenes where something ridiculous happens and the actors on screen are like, that's ridiculous. And that's what causes the audience to laugh. Nandor Fodor and the Talking Mongoose. You can't even get through the title without laughing. You saw some movies this week. You started with Gran Turismo. This is a another movie based on a video game, right?
It is. It's based on the Sony PlayStation game of the same name. And this is a very good movie. I saw it with a packed audience, and I will say everyone was cheering along. It's wow. Based on a true story. And the idea was, it's cool running, Steve. You know, basically, John Candy is going to get some Jamaicans. They're going to race the bobsled because that's going to be the best. And at the end of it, they're going to win. But this is a little different. This is similar. There's an ad exec who basically feels that people who play the Gran Turismo game, who have raced these tracks hundreds, if not thousands of times, and perform real well, that they could actually perform well on a real car in a real track. And there is obviously a bunch of skeptics of this, but Team Nissan, Steve, Nissan Motors, has decided that they will fund this.
Wow.
And it's a true story. Mm-hmm. And it is exciting. It is a family-based film. There's certainly, in some levels, it is a commercial for Sony.
Okay.
For some
and
reason.
Nissan.
And Nissan. And it uses the Sony fonts. It uses the Sony hues. But I will tell you that the people who were in the audience, and once again, it was a packed audience, were excited. And the races are fun. You were cheering for this young man. And it is a very good movie. I say 70 out of 100.
Wow.
And if you need a family film to watch, there's no sexual situations. He's just a kid. He's playing it. It's pretty much all ages. I think we're fine there with a few bad words thrown in here and there.
I'm encouraged by a film like that. There's a lot of my students who love video games, and the idea of a video game leading to something real is not a new story. Remember the last Starfighter, 1984, Ender's Game in 1985, and Armada by Ernest Cline in 2015. That idea, that spark of something special that you can do is a great story to motivate kids to go to the next level.
Well, you can easily see how this could move to war situations, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
If you can learn to fly fighter jets and things like that, drive tanks, anything of that nature, you know, those could be drones. And you could be a long way away and you could do it. So certainly there is this negative part to it where it could go. But on the positive sense, we're racing automobiles, Steve.
It sounds exciting and dangerous. You also saw Landscape with Invisible Hand. This is the adaptation of the M.T. Anderson book from 2017.
It is. And, you know, if you remember, we read an M.T. Anderson book from 2002, which was Feed with Professor Pamela Bedour.
Mm-hmm.
So where we're going to end this review is real quick, that we are going to read more M.T. Anderson. He seems to be incredibly bright. He has a vision when he's reading. He's got a depth to his writing. And this movie shows that depth. So here's the negative part. Steve, I watched this film in a private theater. I was the only one in this theater watching this film at the Alamo Drafthouse. I had the whole thing to myself. This is a good cast. This is a very interesting story. The idea is some aliens came down. They have provided the world with many things. Like, you don't have to go get food anymore. You don't have to get a lot of stuff. But it took away a lot of jobs.
Mm.
And so what ended up happening is people had to reacclimate. They could go work with the alien group, or they're down on Earth, kind of suffering, trying to figure out what to do. And our kids that we follow, they decide that they're going to do what is equivalently a video blog of their love life. As in, they're going to fall in love. They're going to record their interactions when they go to dinner or go to the dance or something of that nature. And the aliens really like that. That's something that they don't have as part of their society. But anyway, they eventually get sued because the aliens determine they're not really in love. And it's just not
real. The aliens sue them?
Yes. And so there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of depth to this story. So, you know, we have this situation where things have come in. They've changed society tremendously.
Hmm.
And there's disruption. But we're also dealing with what people are willing to do during that time and how they interact with each other, how they treat each other, what they will do to protect their family. There's really a depth to it that M.T. Anderson's work brought out. That is why this is a movie. I don't, you say, well, where would I show this movie? I don't think I would be able to show it in a movie in the park. Because it's a thinking person's movie.
Okay.
Now this is a really good movie. My kids, if they were in high school or in middle school, yeah, this would be a good movie to watch. There would be something here. In fact, I could put together a whole festival of movies that are good. They're made for this young person, along with, you know, just a depth and philosophy through it, something that really make you think, but they're just going to be missed by many people. Like I said, I watched this alone. I didn't really have an audience there. I'm so sorry for this, because I'm going to rate this 65 out of 100, and this is a good film. So I like this. I like M.T. Anderson, and I think we need more writers like him.
Book it. Brings us to our book of the week. I've got a treat for you this week, Chip. You are going to love the conversation of Muppets in Moscow, the unexpected, crazy, true story of making Sesame Street in Russia. This was published in October of 2022 by Natasha Lance Rogoff, who is this central character in this story. This is a true story. This is a biography, a memoir of this woman's work to get the cultural entity of Sesame Street into Russia in the 1990s.
So Russia and Natasha.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness. It seems like it's made to be written, Steve. Tell us about this story.
Did you go French instead of Russian just there?
I did.
Natasha definitely has Russian background. Her family is from Russia. She speaks Russian and English. She is an American who was working in the television industry, and she was tapped as the Russian-speaking person who could have the powerful personality to bring this culture of all of the ideals of the children's television workshop to the Russian audience. And so we have to do a little history here. There's a little bit of history. In the 1980s, you and I thought of Russia as the big bad enemy, the Cold War. It was the United States and Russia. And then when
the United States and Soviet Union, which included Russia.
You're right. The words have changed. When the Soviet Union dissolved in 1991, that's when everybody in the world saw the opportunity in that area to make money. The democracy that was being rolled into that area in the early 1990s was huge. There was a huge push to change the culture of Russia, and the Children's Television Workshop thought that that was an opportunity to change the minds of the young people, to change the culture, to give them the ideals of Sesame Street.
That seems perfectly reasonable. How did it work out, Steve?
Well, the story is full of the gangster style democracy that was in Russia at the time. The story is full of assassinations. The story is full of organized crime.
It's still there.
Uh-huh. It didn't go away. This opportunity to make a society in the democratic thinking didn't really work out very well in Russia. This television program suffered and spent a lot of time and money to try to grease the right palms, to put money in the right pockets, to get this television program on the air.
And that's the whole point, is that creating a democracy is not enough. You have to have the individual rights, and you also have to have the legal system involved there. And what they didn't have a lot of that at all, obviously. And it created these, ultimately just fiefdoms, these mobster groups, mm-hmm. as they took each other out. And, you know, obviously the leader of Russia today was the winner.
There's no doubt that the current state of Russia is under Putin's leadership.
He's talking about, you know, 30 years ago or so.
Mm-hmm. 30 years ago, there was this opportunity, and a lot of people from around the world thought that they could bring a change to this culture in Russia. Natasha is a very strong person, and the story of her fight to bring this educational programming to Russian children is an amazing thing to read. She felt the messages of morality and education were best for those children and for the rest of the world, to change the culture of the Russian children, to change the feeling and the education around the world. There were plenty of people that were against her in this communication of how usurping some of the Russian culture with American culture wouldn't work out well. And she was really fighting the good fight.
And that may be part of the being naive about mm-hmm. recognizing that other cultures value different things.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to bring American culture onto another culture who they do things differently, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Is really stressful. And, you know, we live in the Chicago area, and, you know, we've got a lot of people who grew up in the former Soviet satellite states and Russia. And sometimes they have a difficult time understanding American society. Why can't this be done? Mm-hmm. Well, because we created a snake pit of a government system that's very different than having a mobster basically saying this can be done. Although Chicago seems to have worked, it's daily could get things done, Steve.
There are certainly administrations of people that work well with certain other people and get things accomplished in Chicago, aren't there?
It's too bad he couldn't bring in, they didn't bring in the machine, Steve, Bert Kreshner, to come in without his shirt and, help out a little bit in getting this program up to running.
My son loves Bert Kreshner, and that he went to a comedy show where he stood on stage for hours and just told these great stories. He's such a great storyteller, especially when it comes to Russia and all of his exciting lifestyle there.
A little vodka goes a long way, Steve. Steve, tell us more about the Muppets in Russia.
This show did get off the ground. It did get on the air in 1996. There was a time where this program actually became a part of Russian television, and it was on the air for a small amount of time before the next group, Vladimir Putin's group, removed it and any other things that he didn't like about the cultural appropriation here.
Well, did they feel that it was American propaganda in mm-hmm. in Russia?
And just very
similar to like Russia Times, RT, that we have here?
And the question is Sesame Street propaganda? Is it trying to change the culture? Is it giving information to the children to change who they are in a way that that culture does not want, does not desire? Is that propaganda? I would say, yeah. That is propaganda. That is a way into the culture. This book is intriguing. The intrigue, the spy level intrigue of this young lady who has Russian background, who has a way in with language into this society, but is still absolutely an outsider, is a great story. I was intrigued to find out if she was going to be successful. I did not know the history of this program in Russia, and I didn't know. I didn't know if she was going to make it by the end. I didn't know if she was going to survive. There were so many assassinations, so many frightening pieces of this story where the television studio was taken over by armed people several times in the story of putting this program together.
And think about that. It is a free society at that point.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have what the Soviet Union did to those areas. This is supposedly a free area.
Mm-hmm.
And it idea. Still was, and it was still being run, particularly Russia. Like it was a, so the satellites were willing to adopt the West
mm-hmm.
because they were destitute. Russia has enough resources that they were able to fight that off pretty well. Interesting.
And this is a story that continues. And we are still talking about Russia. We're still talking about Putin. We're still talking about how they do business and how that business is done very differently. That endemic corruption and widespread human rights violations that we are seeing out of Russia right now, including the imprisonment and suspension of political opponents, intimidation and censorship. We are seeing all of that in the story of Russia still 30 years after this. I like this book a lot. I think that the people that love history will love this book. The people who love Sesame Street will love this book. The people who love education will love this book. This has something for everybody. It's not James Bond, but boy, oh boy, the spy level things that she had to do to get this done are fascinating.
It's time to get things started on The Muppet Show tonight.
That's different. That's Sesame Street. That is not Sesame Street. I do also recommend, I'll recommend again, Street Gang, The Complete History of Sesame Street. That was published in 2008 by Michael Davis. That is such a great, compelling tale of creation and entertainment and education and history and American culture. I love the story of American culture in these books. That's Muppets in Moscow, The Unexpected, Crazy, True Story of Making Sesame Street in Russia, published in 2022 by Natasha Lance Rogoff.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. There's plenty of things happening in the world. Let's talk about almost none of them. First, let's get the sad news out of the way first. We lost a legend on Friday, September 1st. Jimmy Buffett passed away.
He did. Steve, he was the son of a sailor.
Yes, he was. He certainly was. What's your history with Jimmy Buffett? Did you ever go to a Jimmy Buffett concert?
I've been roped into many Jimmy Buffett's concerts, Steve. It doesn't matter what community you move into. There's always a group of people that when Jimmy Buffett comes into town, they're like, we rented a school bus. And everybody show up at John's house, and John's family is going to take, I don't know, like 70 people after they've been jacked up on margaritas and Corona beer off to go see Jimmy Buffett for a really good time, where he sits there in his shorts and his shirt and just, I don't know, everybody's happy, Steve. Everybody's happy.
I absolutely agree. That is totally my background with Jimmy Buffett. My friend Bears brought me up to Poplar Creek Music Theater in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, in the early 1990s to see a Jimmy Buffett concert. I had no clue who Jimmy Buffett was until the moment that Bears said, hey, come with me to this concert. I said, okay, let's go. You remember, I grew up in the far south suburbs. So Hoffman Estates was such a long drive into such a foreign area. By the way, 30 years later, that's pretty much where I live, is right there next to where Poplar Creek used to be. It is now the Now Arena, formerly the Sears Center. But boy, did I have an eye-opening cultural moment going to my first Jimmy Buffett concert in the early 1990s.
Well, the benefit is he will at least be able to, because he will be all-knowing, know where his lost shaker of salt is, Steve.
Oh, that's very nice and cultural for you to think of. After Jimmy Buffett's passing, now he's omnipotent and he knows where his salt shaker is.
Well, I have a fraternity brother and a good friend of mine, Bryce Wagner. He loved Jimmy Buffett tremendously. In 2017, he convinced Jimmy Buffett to allow him to have backstage access to him along with the fans. And he created a documentary called Parrot Heads. And you are welcome to go and try to watch that and enjoy reminiscing about what Jimmy Buffett meant to a whole group of people. The part of the movie is like, well, I just goes, look at all those deadheads out there. And his bandmate said, those are not deadheads, Jimmy. Those are parrot heads.
Nice.
And that's where the name came from.
We had a cheeseburger in paradise here in the area for a while. It was a fun time going to that restaurant and thinking about the joy that Jimmy Buffett brought to us. They didn't have a buffet at the Jimmy Buffett restaurant.
All right, so let me make a fun little off-color story about a good friend of mine who is a teacher. And during his period that he has to plan, he used to keep Jimmy Buffett playing, and he said used to, because he walked in, because he left the room and walked in, and there was a certain song about a certain activity that just happened to come up. And he was like, oh, I can't listen to this.
Jimmy Buffett sang about life. He sang about waterbeds. He sang about all sorts of activities. And it was truth. It was truth what he was able to put down. And boy, did people love Jimmy Buffett.
Steve, if I was going to write a story about a dystopian city and about a committee who a group of trustees who ran that city could do, what would I write about, Steve?
Well, happy Labor Day, everyone. This week, the police in New York City are using surveillance drones to watch, monitor backyard parties.
If this doesn't sound like George Orwell's 1984, then I don't know what does, because this certainly seems like a violation of rights. Agreed. And it's going to create an incentive to have coverings over backyards and stuff like that. It's just, this is awful.
There's something overreaching about the use of this technology. Surveillance drones flying around your city right now, trying to prevent crime, but at what cost? Privacy concerns are huge here.
Exactly, Steve. Exactly.
This is something to keep an eye on for sure. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think so. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Threads and X.com, Instagram and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and YouTube. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm autumn-loving Chip Hasenflug.
Cinnamon. Peppermint. Strawberry at 1 o'clock.
It's pumpkin spice season, Steve.
We'll see you in the future.